terms of its relevance to the Isra of Halbanas Pnei Chaver Beramim, that the Gemara in the end of Hazav picks up from the whole Ona topic. It really is fascinating, just our Sheni for this week, Sheni Bahar. It's rare that you find such a direct correlation that Hazav is Sheni of Bahar. And three topics which are not so obviously related to each other, two more than the third, are all dealt with Keseder and Hazav. So the question of what a Kenyan is, that was derived from Psukim and Bahar, and then Onos Mamon and Onos Dvarim. So by the very end of the parak, the Gemara picks up from Onos Dvarim, and because of Onos Dvarim, it gets into the whole sugya, the major sugya in Shas, about the very severe isser of Halbanos Pnei Chaver Berabim, of embarrassing people in public. So just to address that topic a little bit, so the Gemara, it's definitely Kedai to see it, it's part of the parak that we're learning Bekiyas, but the Gemara talks about this prohibition, and the Gemara tells us that David HaMelech was hounded by people who were trying to embarrass him over his episode with Bathsheba, and even though he had tried to move past it, to do tshuva, nonetheless, people would always try to make fun of him, and that he'd be giving a shiur, and somebody would raise his hands and say, King, that's a great shiur about the psik ratio on Nichalei by the Rabbana. What's the story about somebody who gets involved with the Suffolk Ishazish? So he says, such a person is executed, but he has a chelek and olam haba. Well, somebody who's malbim p'nei chaver b'rabim, ain't lo chelek olam haba. So the Gemara says, you see from there, that noyach lo li adam, it's preferable for a person shiyavo al Suffolk Ishazish, better to get involved with a possibly married woman rather than embarrass someone in public. So to my knowledge, that din is not brought in the Sifrei Halacha, which is maybe not so surprising. It doesn't come up that often. It's not the scenario people are usually dealing with. But the Gemara goes on to also tell a story about Yehuda and Tamar. The Torah tells us in Parshas Vayeshev about the whole episode where Tamar was pregnant, and she's on trial because the assumption is that she's pregnant from somebody outside the family, and she was a Shemer Zibum. And the truth is, as we know, the father was really Yehuda, but he didn't realize that that was her. He didn't realize that he was the father of her children. And she had this ploy to make him come forward. This is all from the Psukim, right? And the implication you get is that if he didn't come forward on his own in response to her prompting, then she would not have said anything. She would have allowed the trial to go through, for her to be convicted, be burnt in a fiery furnace, rather than embarrass Yehuda. Now the Psukim are difficult by itself. Before you get to the Gemara, you can ask a lot of questions. Is this really the din? The person who's on trial is not allowed to exonerate himself by saying what really happens. Very hard to believe that that's the case. That's really the halacha. Happens to be Rav Asher Weiss in the Sefer, I think probably in Parshas Vayeshev, has a long discussion about that. And the halacha, we certainly wouldn't think that's the case. That if a person is on trial, so nobody would assume that any defense he's going to put on is going to be restricted by an isser of Lashon Hara or an isser of Halbanos Pnei Chaver Barabim. A person has the right to defend himself, especially in a capital case. So that's a question before you even get to the Gemara, just why did she act that way? And that's the Mefarshim struggle with that. But in any event, the Gemara gets an attitude from here that noyach leli adam, that it's apparently preferable for a person sheyapil atzmei lekivshin shel esh, that he should let himself be thrown into a fiery furnace, v'al yal ben pnei chaver b'rabim, rather than embarrass somebody else in public. And it makes it sound as if this is a yehariv al-yavar, that this is a situation where better to give up your life rather than embarrass somebody else in public. So how could that possibly be true? So it seems like it's essentially based on what the Gemara has over there, that there is a comparison to be drawn between Halbanos Pnei Chaver Barabim and Shvichas Damim. That if you embarrass someone, it's like you are killing them. And the Gemara has a physiological clue that when a person gets embarrassed, so the blood drains, so it's Shvichas Damim. But presumably it means something more significant than that, that on some level the pain of humiliation is comparable to death. So l'chaira, there is a chakira to be asked here, that is at the core of many issues. Is the Gemara making a literal comparison? Is it really saying that it's actually equal to death? Which you could say really in two ways. You could say that the pain is so intense that people would sometimes prefer death. And while we hope that we would never see things that way, I mean, we know that it is the case. Nabuch, you see it in this generation, in this country too, that people have taken their own lives rather than endure humiliation. Which you could say in two ways. Either that's a proof that the pain is worse than death, or that maybe it's a sakanas nefashos, that a person will pursue that path rather than undergo humiliation. So I think it's a little bit of an open question as to what the Gemara is getting at by comparing it that way. But those are both possible readings. Or you could say it doesn't mean it b'chal. It's a guzma. It's a way of saying it's a very serious aveira, but practically speaking, we wouldn't treat it that way. So the idea to say that humiliation is comparable to death, l'chor is open to that question as to what it means. And therefore the question of calling it Yehari Val Yavur would presumably hinge on that. That we know that by Ritzicha Mamish there's a minute Yehari Val Yavur, as the Gemara says in Sanhedrin, on Dafai and Dalad Mun Aleph, that if I put a gun to your head and I say, shoot that guy or I'll shoot you, so you're not allowed to do it. This is Yehari Val Yavur. So if Albanus Bnei Chaver Baravim is Mamish like Ritzicha, so then one could assume it would have the same din, perhaps theoretically. So that's what the Gemara a little bit sounds like, and the truth is, seems to be a machlokus rishonim how to interpret the Gemara. We should emphasize, bottom line, do not try this at home. But it does seem to be a little bit of an open question, that on the side of those who thought it was literal, you have Rabbeinu Yonah. Rabbeinu Yonah is in Shari Tshuva, where he understands it to be a literal din. While on the other hand, you have those who thought that, well, just also with Rabbeinu Yonah, Tosfos is a question. The Tosfos Masechet Sota and Daf Yud. Tosfos has been interpreted by some, such as the Brisker Rav and a few others, as saying that it is Yehari Val Yavur, because Tosfos asked the question that the Gemara in Sanhedrin says the three Averis that are Yehari Val Yavur, so it should say four. The list should be longer. Why is this not on the list? So the easiest answer to that question is, it's not on the list because it's not a real din. It's not literal. So the fact that Tosfos doesn't say that gives you the impression maybe that Tosfos holds it is a real din. But the problem is, it's hard to really conclude that way, because Tosfos's second easiest answer could have been, it's not on the list because it is on the list. That if it's part of murder, so murder is on the list, so that would be the second easiest answer to give. So Tosfos doesn't give either of the top two easiest answers, so it's a little hard to try to infer negatively what Tosfos' position is based on what it doesn't say. So I think it's a little bit of an open question what Tosfos' view is. But in any event, you have Rabbeinu Yonah. And on the other side, you have most explicitly the Meiri, that the Meiri, in a couple of places where this Gemara appears, Gemara shows up in a few places. So the Meiri says that this is a guzma, this is a darach ha'ara, this is darach tzachas. He has language for saying that this is just a turn of phrase. It's a way of saying this is a very serious avera, but it doesn't mean that it's literally like murder. And the Rambam is probably also in that camp, because the Rambam in Hilchos Sodei Torah, again, you have to infer negatively, but the Rambam says that anything that's not Yehari Val Yavur, that's not listed, you cannot volunteer. That was the Machlokes Rishonim, whether it's mutter to volunteer to give up your life for an Avera, to avoid an Avera, if it's not one of the big three. And the Rambam says you cannot. And therefore, you have to assume that he's going to list very specifically what are the big three, and he doesn't talk about Habanas Pnei Chaver Baram. So that's essentially probably a machlokus Arishonim, and it was a machlokus a little bit of later generations as well. The Binyan Siyan has a tshuva about it, Vaji Yosef has a tshuva about it, there's a lot of literature about it, and it's a somewhat of an open question. Again, the emphasis is, I would say, don't try this at home, but the whole discussion is very helpful, because usually that's not the choice we're dealing with. If we're ever in Nichshol and embarrassing somebody in public, it's usually not because the gun was put to our heads and it was do or die. It's less pressure. So when you think about the fact that there were poskim who said you couldn't do this even pikuach nefesh, So then it becomes a much more a powerful idea. You certainly want to avoid it when it's not pikuach nefesh. But the position itself, I think the best explanation that I saw was one of the rabbinical journals. There was an article by Rav Pinchas Levinson, which I think makes a lot of sense, where he said as follows. He says that the phrasing of the Gemara, which is a little bit unusual, Noach lala adam, it's preferable for a person. What does that language mean? So he thinks it means as follows, that basically, theoretically it's true, that humiliation could, under some circumstances, be equivalent to death. But you can never know what's really going to happen, because there's so many variables. As we see, we can never predict what scandal is going to be a big deal, what's going to blow over quickly and everyone forgets about, what becomes much bigger than everyone could ever imagine. There's so many variables in the way things actually play out that you could never know in advance that the humiliation you'd be trying to avoid is doima l'ritzicha. And of course, it clearly depends on how serious it is. When the Gemara says that humiliation is like murder, it can't mean that anything we consider embarrassing is like murder. If somebody spills spaghetti on his pants in the cafeteria, so it's humiliating, but no one would ever say that that's worse than death. So it's, clearly we have to be talking about a certain degree of humiliation. So we never know how it's actually going to play out, how the person himself is going to respond, how the people around are going to respond. Will it be a very brief experience? Will it continue to go on forever? Literally, maybe. So that's there's no way to know. So to say that you should take a drastic step, like risk your life, we wouldn't say that in practice. But in theory, it's true. In theory, there could be a type of humiliation that is so severe that it's like inflicting death upon the person. So this issue of whether it's the maisa literal or not, sorry.
Is that almost like a heter?
Heter what? To do what?
Well, you never really know how bad it's going to be. So like,
no, chalila, because certainly if your life was not at stake, so you're dealing, there's certainly an isser to embarrass people. Right? And not only is it usser, but the consequences could be so grave that it may be not just an aveira, but comparable to murdering them. So that I...
murder.
So right, so for sure you're not going to do it. Right, but what if we're asking you to give up your life not to do it? So give up your life, that we wouldn't say, because to know that it's really like murder, that's too much of a question mark. But certainly for an isser, certainly an isser. Hi.
I mean, the whole idea of the Bittgenstein is that we sort of don't know how each individual might react.
Yeah, this was, because the Bittgenstein we mentioned has a chew about it, but this was a different...
The premise is because of how he's going to relate to it. But the lesson of the Gemara is that it's not like... It's not relating someone being embarrassed to someone being killed. It's you embarrassing someone to you killing someone.
Right, because of the effect that you have on them, because they are...
So automatically it's...
Well, that's not automatic. That's the question. I think you have to say that it's not automatic, but that it's a potential. Right. That either, first of all, it's going to depend on how embarrassed they get, but a certain level of embarrassment may be either more painful than death, or maybe it even means that it's actually... possibly going to push them to Rahman al-Islam to do something, and maybe that's what the intent is. Because we know, kachava, you know, and unfortunately in this door we see it even more with things that happen on the internet, that people of Rahman al-Islam, children, have taken their own lives in response to humiliation online. It's a real thing. So, in any event, so this is... This is a question, how literally to take the Gemara. So there is also a psak Reb Shlomo Kluger has in his commentary to the Choshen Mishpat, to the Chachma Shlomo, the end of Choshen Mishpat. Reb Shlomo Kluger has a psak which nobody accepted. All the later generations, they didn't accept this. But it's interesting. He actually has a different proof for this, from a different sugya, but it's relevant to this point. But if you read it inside, you'll see that he comes at the process from a different logic. But let's say you are passing a river and you see somebody drowning. So you're mechayiv to save his life if you can, right? If you know how to swim. So we just did Cheney of Kedosha, the Losamad al Dam Reachem. But let's say you're not such a strong swimmer. So if you jump in the river, it's pretty likely you're going to drown yourself. So then you're not mechayiv. Maybe it's not even mutter. That's a whole discussion. So what if you're not going to die, but let's say saving this person means you have to humiliate yourself. So Shlomo Kluger seems to believe that you're not mechuyev to humiliate yourself in order to save somebody else's life. Now again, if you look at it, why he says it, he has a different way of getting to this conclusion. But it seems to also conform to a literal reading of this idea of Habanus Pnei Chaver B'Rabim, like death. So if I'm not mechuyev to die to save your life, so too I'm not mechuyev to be mevaz myself to save your life. So this was not accepted in the later Sfarim. The Kli Chemda has discussion about this. Dayan Grossness from London is Tshuva Slave Aryeh. And Rav Shlomo Zalman talks about this in his Tshuva's Mincha Shlomo. And his son-in-law, Zam Nechemiah, has a piece about it. I think actually Rasha Weiss also has a piece about it somewhere. Yeah. Maybe he comes at it from a little bit different angle. Sorry?
The new Sefer. That's true.
Is it a new Sefer he has about it?
Yeah.
Okay. You have to finish reading. Read all the reviews.
The second one in the Rafua section.
Right. Okay. There you go. So take a look. So this is another possible example of taking it very literally. So we mentioned that Rav Shlomo Zalman didn't accept this, and he points out various reasons not to accept it, but it's not because he didn't take the whole comparison literally. He thought the comparison was pretty literal, and therefore he has a question, but he points out, just while he's arguing on the Chachma Shlomo, he says, so for example, nobody would say that if somebody is coming to be Mavazi, you could shoot them, alternative. Even though the other way, presumably, if somebody's coming to be Mavazi, you can be Mavazi then, al Tzrodev. That's presumably what David HaMelech was doing with the guy in the story. But you have to stick within the same realm. So either the Kirat Zichor or Zichor Mamish. You can actually shoot somebody who's coming to actually shoot you, and you could be Mavazi somebody who's coming to be Mavazi, but you can't actually shoot somebody who's coming to be Mavazi. Nobody would ever say such a thing. So Rav Shlomo Zalman says that's already proof that it's not really literal. He also says, in the case of the Chachma Shlomo, you're going to do something to be Mavazi yourself. He says that's already, it's already different. Anybody who's taking it upon themselves, it's already not the same. He quotes a Gemara and Tainus like that. Anybody who's taking this action himself is never going to have the same kind of emotional impact. But he's not convinced that it's not literal, because he asked the question, how come if we say that pikuach nefesh is docha Shabbos, so maybe we should say that if a person knows that somebody's about to be mevuza and he could stop it, let's say, with a phone call, or he could stop it with a writing a letter to us on the computer or something like that, sending an email to somebody, and he could save somebody from getting embarrassed, so we should say pikuach nefesh docha Shabbos. So why don't we say that? So he's not ready to say that halacha, but he thinks the question is a powerful question. He acknowledges, by the way, that if it was a drabanon violation of Shabbos, then it would be mutter. That's a sugi we did last year, right? We did last year the sugi of kavod abrias docha Shabbos. So kavod abrias is docha only dinim drabanon. So if it was a din drabanon, then taka it would be pushed away. But if it's a deraisa, okay, so then that's not enough in practice, but not sure why not. There is a less well-known sefer, the Tshuva Shem Mishimon, written by Rav Shimon Pollack. He actually does come to the conclusion that stopping someone from being embarrassed could be docha Shabbos. It's not on the same level of influence as the Mincha Shlomo. But the question he leaves is a powerful one. So I think he could use the same answer that Pinchas Levinson said. It's probably the same point, that theoretically, on paper, it might be true that if you really had some way to know that we're dealing with that level of bizayon, so it probably would be docha Shabbos, especially if you say the reading in the Gemara is that you're really worried the person may actually kill themselves, chalilah. So then, for sure, everyone would agree that if you think somebody is at risk for a suicide and you have to be mechal Shabbos to save them, no one would doubt that that's a situation of pikuach nefesh. So if that's really what we're talking about, if you really had reason to think that that's what the Metzius is, so presumably it would be. But as a matter of general policy, you're not going to say that we Michal Shabbos to prevent somebody from being embarrassed, because we don't necessarily assume that the Stam embarrassment is really on the Madrega that the Gemara says theoretically could happen. perhaps similar to what we said about what he had said about martyrdom. It's probably the same svara, that in theory it could be true, but in practice this is not an attitude that's going to be taught to the rabbim in general. Hi.
I hate to sound so like terse and cold, but just from a halachic perspective, let's say you have a real chashash that someone's going to get embarrassed, they might actually go and kill themselves. So like, what are you afraid? They're going to do a physical action. Let's say they have a gun and they shoot themselves in your head. But like, so they did the action, you caused it. Is that grum at the max, maybe? I mean, like...
But it's still a terrible consequence.
Right.
Right, so you won't be executed in Bezdin for it. But you'd certainly be Mechal Shabbos to prevent the Metzias of somebody dying.
So you'd be Mechal Shabbos to prevent the grum.
Yeah, Mechal Shabbos to prevent the Aver, or you Mechal Shabbos to prevent the Metzias. That's what the Pekuach... Uh-huh. Right, so right. Certainly you would, you know, if he's sick, if it's a heart attack, it's also not your fault. But you'd still be Mechal Shabbos to save him from the heart attack. Right, so
then, but you'd be like treating an issue, whereas you would be preventing.
Right, but that's always the same thing. That if the issue is that it's going to have this consequence, so we're not focused on who's causing it or the liability. Yeah. So if the assumption is that the consequence, if you would think that what the Gemara means is that the result is equal to death, so then maybe there still is a svar, and some of the svarim consider that issue. It's another sefer, Siach Yosef, has a whole essay to discuss what the response is to that question there. Shlomo Zalman asks, there's a couple of lamdish ways to look at it. But especially if you mean, which maybe the Gemara does mean, that it really is a metzias, that it could lead to actual ritzicha, actual death, so then that would be viewed as a pikuach nefesh derech HaShabbos issue according to everybody. So the question is just maybe how likely is it that we're dealing with that, and it doesn't necessarily mean that anytime somebody is a little bit embarrassed is going to fall into this category. So another example of how the question could be taken literally, so there is a shaila that some of the poskim talk about, including the Shuvas L'Haris Nasan, what did I say? And the Rav Shmuel Buzner and the Shuvas Shevet Halevi, they both consider the question that the Gemara, maybe we talked about this a little bit a few weeks ago, when we talked about Berchas Kohanim. In the Shemini, we talked about that a little bit, right? That the din of Berachas Kohanim, where the Gemara says in the end of Maseches Brachos that a Kohen Shaharagas HaNefesh, so Kohen killed somebody, so we don't let him duch him. So there's a whole discussion on what qualifies, what we mean murder, or maybe even self-defense or negligence, so a whole discussion. But in any event, the Gemara has this din that your bloody hand, says the Pasuk in Yeshaya, Yedeichem damim aleihu, if your hands are filled with blood, so you can't use those hands for nesias kapayim. So these posts can have a question. Let's say you have a kohen who goes around embarrassing people in public. So should we say that this kohen shouldn't do it? So these two great posts, the L'Haris Nas and the Shevet Halevi, were not ready to go so far. They didn't think the comparison was actually literal. And the L'Haris Nas also points out that even if it was literal, so you wouldn't necessarily say that the din should apply, because the din has, the pasuk has the focus on yudeichem, your hands. So it means dafka, physical murder, something that's at least metaphorically involving the hands. So then the siyas kapayim is about the hands, and we talked about that in Parsha Shir a few weeks ago, so that shouldn't be included. Could make an equal argument, though, that if you embarrass somebody with your mouth, with something you say, so then Berachas Kohanim also involves speech. But, okay, they don't want to go that far. But if you look in the library, you go on the shelf to Berachas Kohanim, you find there are some contemporary svarim in Berachas Kohanim that are less well-known than these two great poskim, but in some of these svarim, they do take a more machmir stance towards that question, or at least a suffix about it. Say that maybe a Kohen who's mevaz people maybe should be considered like a murderer and shouldn't tochen. Moshe Avi, you have a question? You look like you were being nosa kapa. Okay, so in any event, there's also a discussion in the Tshuva Shvos Yaakov, who wonders maybe we should say that Chabaras Pnei Chavero should have the din like one of the Shav Mitzvot Bnei Noach. Maybe it should apply to everyone, because if Ritzicha is one of the Shav Mitzvot Bnei Noach, so maybe Chabaras Pnei Chavero Rabim should be also. Didn't come to that conclusion either, but it's also a consideration. This also perhaps comes up in a question a little bit more theoretical, philosophical. But so we said before, David HaMelech says that the person who embarrasses somebody in public has no chelik in Olam Haba. So where does he get that from? So that's a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. That's correct. But where did Mishnah in Pirkei Avos get it from? So that's a whole discussion. It comes out perhaps L'shitaso. We said before that Rabbeinu Yonah and the Rambam probably argue on the question of Harig V'Yavor, that Rabbeinu Yonah sees it more literally, and the Rambam probably doesn't see it literally. So this could also have L'shitasim over here, because Rabbeinu Yonah says, why is it no chelik in Olam Haba? Says, because he's like the murderer, literally. So we don't find anywhere that a murderer has no chelik in Olam Haba. Says, you're right, it's worse than murder. Why is it worse? It's worse because it's the same. But the murderer will realize he did something gefelech. It'll be a whole scandal, it'll be a whole story. So he'll eventually do tshuva. But the Mal Pnei Chaver Barabim did something as bad, and is not going to do tshuva. He'll think this is no big deal, this is just my style. It doesn't have any significance, and he's not going to do tshuva. So that's the assumption, that he has the ikar punishment of a murderer. While the Rambam is l'shitaso, because the Rambam, if by Harval Yavur, he doesn't see it as literal. So to here, it sounds like that's the case, because the Rambam in his Perish Mishnayos to Sanhedrin, the Rambam says that somebody who regularly, not stam once, but regularly embarrasses people in public, so it's not that he does the Avera once and he's knocked out because of the Chumras Avera. It's that somebody does this all the time, so that is a simon, that he's in a specific halachic category known as a jerk. Right? And exactly. And that person has no chelik in Olam Haba, not because of this Avera, because it's unlikely he's on the list to begin with. When they go up to Shemayim, they check the list, it's hard to believe he's on it, that person who behaves like this. So that's probably what she taught some. And there are others who suggest, later Svarim may suggest, that maybe it is Mida Keneged Mida. And that, how does it correlate? Because the whole idea of a chelik in Olam Haba, that you have an eternal soul to get eternal reward, what's that based on? It's based on the idea that a person is created B'Tzelem Elokim, and therefore he has an eternal soul to benefit from a chelik in Olam Haba. But the idea of B'Tzelem Elokim is also the mucker for something else. It's also the mucker for the idea of human dignity. So if you don't believe that people have dignity, you believe that you can be mavaz of people, so then it makes sense, mida k'neged mida, that you're not nana from the Tzelem Elokim either. So that helps focus us on the idea that embarrassing somebody is considered to be a denial of the Tzelem Elokim, the fact that somebody is created with dignity. And that could help us understand the whole concept. L'maisa, there is to try to focus on the issue by itself, and the Gemara has the phrase, Hamalbim Pnei Chaveru Berabim. So you could ask on almost every one of those words how to translate it. First of all, you say Hamalbim, that's a little bit surprising, right? You whiten somebody's face. So if I had to pick a color for embarrassment, probably go with red, right? Make the person blush. So what's Pshat Hamalbim? So the commentaries in the Mishnayos and elsewhere, first of all, there are some who have the Gersos that change it and say Hamadim, that actually that Gersa does exist. But that's not the most common. Clearly, by far the most common Gersa that we see is Hamalbim, Pnei Chaver Abrahim. But they explain that what happens is, a person first, he turns red a little bit because he blushes. Then, the blood, when he's really abjectly humiliated, the blood drains, that's what we call blanching, and then he turns white as a sheet. So that's Hamalbim Pnei Chaver. What's Pshat Rabim? So you could ask two questions about Rabim. First of all, what's the definition of Rabim? And second of all, is that necessary? It's only Usur if it's Rabim? Or is that just a phrase, but the Usur is independent of Rabim? So in terms of what Rabim is, you have a general agreement among the poskim that Rabim is not, you don't have to be the World Wide Web, you don't have to have even a minion. But the rabbi means three. Where do we know that from? From Hilchos Lashon Hara, right? We have the phrase Ape Tlasa, in front of three is public knowledge. So Gemara says Chavra Chavra Islay, Chavra Chavra Islay, the word spreads once you have three people. So that's generally agreed to be the case here. But the assumption is also that three includes the embarrassee and the embarrassor. So therefore, we mean one witness. If there's one witness watching, that's considered to be public. So, if that's the case, hi.
The point is that it's going to spread, though.
Embarrassee, you think wouldn't spread it. Right, it's a fair point. But nonetheless, that seems to be the assumption that if the one uninvolved witness is going to do the spreading, so maybe three doesn't necessarily require all of these. If you look at the Chafetz Chaim, Hilchos Lashon Hara, so he has a discussion about that, about Apei Tlasa in general, about what does that mean? Do we think that all three of them are going to, what if, because he talks about, let's say, if you have a room full of Yirei Shamayim, we can't get to all the pratim of Apei Tlasa now because it'll get a little bit far afield, but let's assume it means that the three people are going to spread Lashon Hara. So he says, well, what if the three people are all Yirei Shamayim, they happen to have heard this Lashon Hara, but you know they're not going to spread it? So he writes, you shouldn't assume necessarily it's public knowledge, because the people aren't going to spread it. But then what if two are and one isn't? Or what if one is, and so it'd have to be all three? So that's a whole discussion. So apparently you could say one might be enough out of the three, so you have three people, one guy's not involved, that's enough to spread it around. But then the question still is, does it have to be public, or is private still usher? So there is, that's the machlokas Rishonim probably, but there are those in the later Sfarim who wanted to make an interesting chiluk and said, maybe we'll split the difference. That's what it sounds like, that maybe if you do it in private, that's an aveira. In public, that's where you have, it's like Ritzicha, and there's no Chelik Rom Haba, and it's Yahweh Yavar, and it's Lechus Shabbos. All these discussions we've had, that's Davka in public. So, how do you explain such a distinction? So, presumably, you explain it by saying that there are two different Yisurim here. This is a point that Tashbetz makes in his commentary to Perkei Avos. And that if one embarrasses someone in public, he violates two Yisurim. And conveniently for us this year, it's not only a Bav Metzia topic, but it's the linkage between Sheni of Bahar and Sheni of Kedoshim. I think that you could violate, first of all, Sheni of Bahar is the Yisur Na'as Tvarim that we're talking about. That's one Yisur. But in addition to that, the Sheni of Kedoshim that we spoke about also, Hochiach Tochiach Hasim Yisacha, that if somebody is doing something wrong, you should give him Musar. So says the Gemara in Erechin, that Shema Afilu Yishtan Epanav, maybe you should do this even if in doing so you will change the color of his face. You'll humiliate him. So says the Gemara, no, V'loi Siso Lav Chet, you should not incur an Aveira because of him. So it sounds like there's an Isser to embarrass someone even when you're giving them Musar. And the Rambam in Sefer HaMitzvahs, we spoke about this, says, Rambam says Sefer HaMitzvahs, that this is another example of where the Torah sometimes conveys an Isser in the more extreme terms, and you know that it applies even in the less extreme terms. So if you think you're doing a mitzvah of Tochacha, and even then you're not allowed to embarrass someone, so you could figure out that Kal V'chomer, if you don't have this excuse, if you're not doing a mitzvah, so then for sure you're not allowed to embarrass someone. That will flow out of that. So we have two separate Yisur, Manos Devarim and Loisiso Lovchet. And presumably it breaks down that the Yisur Anos Devarim, that includes a lot of things, as we discussed on Thursday. So if you embarrass somebody even in private, you're at least in violation of Anos Devarim. If you embarrass somebody in public, so then you're taking away from the Tzelem Elokim, you're making the face change color and taking away their human dignity. So that's, you have an Yisur L'Sisa L'Vchet, and perhaps all the extra Chumra Saveira comes together with that component specifically. Which is not to say that a Nos Tavarim by itself is nothing. A Nos Tavarim by itself is Olav, as we saw. And the Mordechai was of the opinion that it should be subject to Malkus. It's a whole discussion what that means. The Vazner is a truth about that. Sherek Nesek Dolo talks about that. You assume that it's Olav Shein Bo Maisa, it has to be Malkus. All right, maybe there's no Malkus. Maybe there is, maybe there isn't. Maybe it's Max Martis. But the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch say that a Bezdin has the right to impose whatever penalties they need to in order to enforce the issue of anos tavarim. And the Gemara says that anos tavarim, the number of ways, is much more chamer than anos mamon. That's the Gemara in the end of Hazal. So again, this is a very important sugya, which ties into so many different things in our lima this year, so it's important to keep this in mind. And I'll just end this topic, and we'll have a few minutes to start Shmei Ka'one. Just end this topic by noting one point a little bit Alpidar Chadrush, especially because it starts off with a story, that they say they asked Yevaron Cutler once, or many times, that somebody asked him that he thinks that he doesn't understand God's plan. That presumably HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants Torah to be studied, right? That's our religion, so we believe that God wants Talmud Torah. So why is it that the people who are the most talented and devoted and committed and interested in learning Torah, the Rashi Yeshiva of the world, they're the ones who don't get to learn, because they have to spend their whole lives fundraising for their institutions. So here you have these people who are ready, willing, and able to learn Torah at a high level. And God's plan is that those people, they have to spend their lives running around the world raising money in order to keep their yeshivas going, so they don't get to learn at all. So what's pshat in that? So supposedly, Ron Cutler had three answers to that question. I only know two of them. If anyone knows the third, feel free to share it. But one answer was, the most likely one, that this way their Torah gets spread, because they're traveling from place to place. They give a shiur here, they give a shiur there, they meet more people. So if they never had to raise money, they would just say shiur in their own Dalet Amos, and the Torah would be very limited. But because they have these fundraising needs, so they end up traveling around the world, and they spread the Torah much farther. But the third answer he gave, I don't know what the second one was, but the third answer was maybe a little bit Alpidar Chadrush, but I think it's very relevant. And he says that we know that somebody who embarrasses someone in public is considered to be like a Ritzach. So occasionally it'll happen that a Rebbe will embarrass a Talmud. He's not going to do it on purpose. He's not a bad guy. But it could happen not on purpose. So that makes him what? A Ritzach B'shogeg. So what's the punishment for Ritzach B'shogeg? Chayiv Galus. So therefore, the Rashi ends up exiled from his yeshiva. He's got to go wandering around. He's Chayiv Galus because he has a din of a Reseach B'shogeg. So it sounds a little bit like a cutesy vort, but I think there is a pshat there, that perhaps the idea is, why do we have such a notion that a Reseach B'shogeg is Chayiv Galus? What's that about? So one could suggest that, what's the problem here? The problem of a Reseach B'shogeg is not an intentional murder. He didn't want to hurt anyone. But he was careless. He didn't value human life enough. He didn't think that it was a big enough deal. And therefore, he ended up doing something dangerous that ended up killing someone. So what's the tikkun? How does that get fixed? It gets fixed that now he has to be in a situation where he has to worry somebody's going to come and kill him. So he's got to constantly think about life and death. He's got to constantly look over his shoulder or run away to a special city, because otherwise somebody will kill him. So this guy who wasn't thinking at all about issues of life and death and was too careless, so now he's got to focus on it all the time, that perhaps is the tikkun for this problem. So too, you could say, how could it be that a Rebbe could end up embarrassing a student if he doesn't want to do it on purpose? So why is it that a Rebbe can end up embarrassing a student? Because he could become disconnected from the fact that there is a status differential, that there is, let's say, a power differential between a teacher and a student. And the same kind of thing that he could say to his colleague, and it wouldn't be a problem, is going to say to a student, he'll end up devastating him, he'll end up creating a very embarrassing situation, just because he's separated from the reality of what it means to be in that type of a position vis-a-vis someone else. So what's the tikkun for that? So now he's got to go around the world, going to people's houses and say, can you help me? Can you help me? Now he's got to be in a very different position. Back at home, he's in charge of the room. He's in charge of the institution. And now he's on the road. He's in the position like the Talmud. He has to go ask for somebody to help him out. Maybe that's a corrective to this attitude that leads to a little bit of carelessness with other people's dignity. And maybe that's something that is meant to bring that about. In any event, so that's a little bit of the power and the impact of anos tavarim, a very important sugya that ends off the fourth parak of Bava Metzia. So we have, I think, about 10 minutes. Let's just quickly get started with Shmei Ka'one, and then we'll pick it up tomorrow. So we started talking about Shmei Ka'one in the context of Sfiras HaOmer. That was our entry to it. It was a yontif topic, but it's a very important shas topic in general. So we try to look at it from the following perspective, that there is a din, the Gemara says in Maseches Sukkah, that Shemaya is Ke'oneh, which it derives from Yoshiyahu HaMelech, who read the Sefer Torah, but the Pasuk says that he read the Sefer Torah, even though he really had it read to him, he listened to the reading of the Sefer Torah, but that is apparently the same thing as reading it, because Shemaya is Ke'oneh. So we pose the following question, which we suggested might be at the root of the whole issue, every issue that comes up in Shemaya Ke'oneh, the question of, what does the phrase mean? Are we comparing verbs, or are we comparing people? Are we saying that Shmia is Ke'aniya, listening is like talking? Or does it mean we're comparing the people? Ha Shemaya Ke'ha'oneh, the one doing the listening, has the same status as the one doing the speaking. What difference does it make? It affects a whole host of things. We saw we went in reverse chronological order. We looked at three machlokas, and that first there was the machlokas, which may not really be a real machlokas, but it was an alleged machlokas between the alleged Beis Halevi and the Chazon Ish and others, that the Beis Halevi rules in a psak that's printed in the Beis Halevi La Torah of all places, that you can do Shemaya Ke'oneh for, I'm supposed to leave rules against someone who said, rules against the anonymous Chacham, who we filled in with Reb Shlomo Mivilna, that Reb Shlomo Mivilna said you can do Berchas Ke'oneh through Shemaya Ke'oneh. You can have one Ke'oneh get up there and recite the Berchas Ke'oneh, and all the other Ke'oneh can listen and fulfill it that way. And the Beis Halevi, and coincidentally his Koresh Yeshiva, the Netziv, and his Chuvis, both said there's no such thing, there's no Shemaya Ke'oneh for Berchas Ke'oneh. But they give different reasons. So the Beis Halevi's reason, the way it's understood, may be misunderstood, is that Shemaya Ke'oneh only works for language, only works for words. It doesn't work if there's anything else that has to be brought into the process. So since Duchening not only has to be recited, but it has to be recited per kol rov, so that's missing if you do it. Shemaya Ke'oneh only takes the words itself, doesn't take the other details, and it's not going to work. And the Chazon Ish and others disagreed with this and said, listen, if that's the issue, then you can't have Kiddush the way we do it, you can't have Megillah the way we do it, because everyone who listens to Kiddush Friday night should have to have a full cup of Kiddush with him, a full cup of wine, otherwise it's just words without a kos, it's no good. Or anybody who listens to Megillah, it's as if he read the Megillah by heart, but he doesn't have a kosher Megillah in front of him, so what good is it if he's saying all the words in the Megillah? So Memela, you have to say, no, that's not what Shemaya Ke'oneh means. It doesn't mean that it's as if you're saying the words that you're listening to and nothing else. It means that you are plugged into the mitzvah of the one reciting the bracha. And whatever they're doing, however they're doing it, you're doing it too. So in the Beis Halevi's version, it's Shmiya Ke'aniya, listening is like speaking, but only like speaking, not like everything else you may need for the mitzvah. And according to Chazon Ish, HaShomea is Ke'ha'oneh. The one doing the listening is like the one doing the speaking, so he gets all the details. So it seems to go to that same question as to the definition of the phrase. We should point out that many disputed this reading of the Beis Halevi, particularly those in the Soloveitchik family, and their tradition is that it's not what the Beis Halevi meant. He didn't mean to say that you cannot fulfill a mitzvah if there's other details, Kiddush, Megillah, all of that. What he meant to say was that the Kol Rav in Birchas Kohanim, that shows you that it's not a mitzvah of speech. It's a mitzvah of communicating, Davka. And if you're not communicating, even if you get up there and you whisper, so whispering is for sure speech, but it's not going to be heard by anyone, so then that's not going to be considered the mitzvah. So therefore, you can't use Shemaya Ke'oneh because it's not simply about speech. It's about actually communicating. But these other concepts, like Kiddush and the like, maybe he would agree with that. We mentioned in that spirit also, there is a chumrah that the Ragged Shaver has, that the idea that when you read the Megillah, and we read the 10 sons of Haman, so the people have a practice to say that themselves, so he thought it was because, since there is a requirement of Neshima Achas, it has to be done in one breath, so you can't do that through Shemaya Ke'oneh. We say it's a little bit of a difficult chumrah, because if that's true, you shouldn't be able to sit without a Kasher Megillah either. So it's hard to understand why it is you don't have to have a Kasher Megillah, if that's really the case, but that's what most of us do. You don't have to have a Kasher Megillah, but you still have to read the 10 sons in one breath yourself, it's a little bit hard to understand. The more likely pshat is, the reason there's a minhag to read it ourselves is because otherwise we're probably not going to hear all the words that's being read in one breath. So that's phase one, that this issue of whether it's just words, that would be shmiya ke'aniya, or whether it's the whole mitzvah, ha-shomeya ke'ha'ona, seems to be this machlokas. So if we go back a little bit chronologically, about another 100 years, so you get to Rabbi Yaakov Emden, who argued on the Taz, the question of whether a blind person can get an aliyah. The Taz says, yes, a blind person can get an aliyah because of shomeya ke'ona. That even though a person getting an aliyah really is supposed to be laning, so you can ask, how can a blind person lane? So the answer is, you're right, once upon a time he couldn't. But nowadays, so we have the Bal Kore who is going to read, and the Ola just comes up and reads along with him. So here the Ola can listen to the Bal Kore, Shemei Ka'ona, that'll give him the ability to lane from the Torah, and very good. And Yaakov Emden said, no, that can't work, because it'll be as if he's reading by heart. So it's just as if he's saying the words. So he says explicitly what the Beis Halevi was accused of saying. He does say it. But it's as if he's just saying words. And therefore the words will be considered to be as if they're by heart. That's not going to help him be considered like he's laning. And the Taz apparently holds no, that it's a connection to the one doing the speaking. The one doing the speaking is reading out of the Sefer Torah, so therefore the Ola is also reading out of the Sefer Torah. So this machlokas seems to parallel the issue that the Chazon Ish and maybe the Beis Halevi were talking about, which all goes back to the definition of the phrase again. So now to go back much further in history, this is apparently Machlokas Rashi and Tosfos. The question is a very different application. The question is, let's say somebody's in the middle of Shemona Esrei and they get up to Kaddish and Kedusha. So what should he do? So he doesn't want to interrupt. He can't interrupt Shemona Esrei to answer Kaddish and Kedusha. So what should he do? So says Rashi, no problem. He'll be quiet and he'll listen. He won't be mafsik, but he'll fulfill Shemei Ka'ona, he'll fulfill answering Kaddish and Kedusha that way. And Tosfos says it's a terrible idea, because if you're going to fulfill the mitzvah that way, Shemei Ka'ona, that means it's as if you're going to be talking, it'll be a hafsik. So if you're not allowed to be mafsik, that's why you want to do this to begin with, so then you also can't do it through Shemei Ka'ona. So it seems to be it's the same machlokas, so there's a very different application, that Rashi holds that the definition is hashomea is kihaone, that you are fulfilling the mitzvah through listening to someone else. And therefore, that's a way to fulfill a mitzvah that maybe is not considered to be a hefzik, so you can have the best of both worlds. But Tosfos, like Rabbi Yaakov Emden and the Beis Halevi, Tosfos will maintain that it's as if you are actually saying the words that you're hearing. Hashomea is kihaone. And therefore, you're back to the problem of a hefzik, and it's not a good idea. And then we mentioned the third sheet, and this also, the Shiboli Aleket. The Shiboli Aleket says that you can't even be yotzei this way. That Rashi and Tosfos both seem to say that you could be yotzei, just Tosfos thought it was the hefzik. But Shiboli Aleket says you can't be yotzei this way, because it's part of an exception. The Gemara says that any time you need to do something with lechachila, but b'dieved, you could leave it out, but it has to at least be possible to do it the lechachila way. If it's not possible to do it the lechachila way, so then that's not good even with the other. So here to say that one can fulfill the answering through Shemei Ka'ona when you're in the middle of Shemona Esrei and you can't be mafsik. So the Shiboli Aleket thought, no. Which is a little bit of a different case. It's an interesting application. That he thought that that's the case of this issue, that it's not good b'di'eved, it's not good l'chachilu, it's not possible, so it can't be good even b'di'eved. So this was disputed by the Shagasari. The Shagasari discussed, let's say you have somebody who can't speak, who's an ilanim, can they fulfill kriyashma through Shemei Ka'onim? So it would seem to have the same issue. If it's physically impossible to speak, maybe according to the Shiboli Aleket, they should not be able to do Shemei Ka'ona. So says the Shagas Aryeh, no, this whole din doesn't apply, because it applies when you have a lechachilu and a b'di'eved. But Shemei Ka'ona, that's not b'di'eved. That's an equally viable, valuable route in order to fulfill the mitzvah. So we're not going to say that all the 99% of the people listen to the Megillah on Purim instead of reading it themselves. They're all yotzei only b'di'eved. That's also lechachilu. So therefore, says the Shagas Aryeh, this whole logic doesn't apply when they're both l'charchila, and therefore he's not worried about that. Parenthetically, Shlakish Arye is also disagreeing with the Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon was his younger contemporary. Shlakish Arye was older. So the Vilna Gaon in his commentary to Brachos, the first Mishnah in Shas, so the Vilna Gaon says the Mishnah starts Me'emasai Korin is a Shema Ba'arvin in plural, and then later on when it's talking about Brachos, uses a singular language. So says the Vilna Gaon, yeah, Brachos, we use single language because one person can make the Bracha and everyone else could listen. When it comes to Kriyashma, there's no din of Shema'a Ka'ona, so therefore everyone has to make their own Kriyashma, so we talk about it in plural. So that's a big Chiddush. It's against it's against some of the other Rishonim, it seems like, and it's against the Shlakish Arye. And the Shlakish Arye is okay with having Kriyat Shema and Shema Ka'ona. But this Vilna Gaon seemed to not be okay with it. Maybe we'll fill in a little bit of that tomorrow. So we were able to get a pretty big chunk of the sugya done in these last few minutes. So God willing, we'll stay on schedule. Everyone should have a wonderful